From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Corey Flintoff, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Corey. Thank you, everybody. You have got a fistful of entertainment for you today. CNN's Queen of Quirky News Stories, Jeannie Mose, will be joining us later to play our game. But first, I wanted to take a second to welcome Corey Flintoff, filling in for Carl Castle, back to our show. Great to have you. It's been a while.
Thank you.
In fact, Corey at one point decided he'd rather go to Iraq than appear on our show. But to bring him back, we had to meet a condition for his return. We had to meet his needs. Corey, can you tell the people what it was you demanded?
I said I wouldn't come back on the show unless I could do Paris Hilton.
So, of course, we had to wait until the time was right. And the time is right. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
My name is Mireille, and I'm calling from Montreal.
Oh, from Montreal. You're our first French-Canadian contestant. This is
very
exciting.
Well, I'm happy to be that. I'm part of your internet following.
That's great. It's so exotic to speak to someone from French Canada. Ooh, how's the poutine?
The poutine is not light.
All right. Well, glad to have you with us.
Is that code?
No.
Does the invasion begin at dawn?
It's the only thing I know about French Canada. They eat poutine, which is French fries with mayonnaise and cheese.
Didn't our president at one point call someone a poutine? I guarantee it.
Well, I mean, was it somebody in Russia?
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, bienvenue to our show, Mireille.
Well, merci beaucoup.
Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for Esquire and the Boston Globe magazine, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Charlie.
Bonjour, bonsoir, whatever.
Also say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column is Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Roxanne.
Hello.
And lastly, a comedian who will be performing at the University of Arizona in Tucson at Centennial Hall on Friday, September 5th, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Paula, I have to say, I love the way your mind works.
Thank you very much, Mireille. It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
Now, Mireille, you're going to start us off by playing Who's Corey This Time. Corey Flintoff is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your home answering machine.
Very good.
All right, ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first quote.
The mist in the air is not a feature of pollution primarily, but a feature of evaporation and humidity.
That was an official denying that the awful brown sludge preventing people from seeing too well or breathing too well is pollution. Where are people having some kind of inexplicable problem with the harmless mist?
Would that be Beijing?
Yes, at the Olympics, of course. When the International Olympic Committee announced that the 2008 Games would be held in Beijing, one of the most polluted major cities in the world, we were told back then, no problem, the Chinese government would have the place smelling like the restroom at the Four Seasons by the opening ceremony. That lovely lavender thing. Then when the athletes started showing up this past week, and actually found themselves unable to force their bodies through the air to get to their cars, the IOC official you heard from said, it's not a problem, it's not pollution, it's just mist. Olympic organizers have adapted to the conditions in Beijing. They've added such events as the throw and then find the javelin competition. And on the last day of the games, the 800 meter gasp.
Mireille, I think they should probably just move them to Montreal because you guys have finally finished paying off 1976, right?
Just barely.
But think about it. The Chinese do have the advantage of they have this massive population with no rights who have to do what they're told. Can't you just put everybody in the streets of Beijing, have them point like away from the city and have them blow really hard? All right, Mireille. For your next quote, we take you now to the annual biker rally in Sturgis, South Dakota.
I told her, with a little luck, she could be the only lady to serve as First Lady and Miss Buffalo Chip.
So who told the crowd at Sturgis that he wanted his wife to enter the usually topless, occasionally bottomless Miss Buffalo Chip beauty pageant?
Well, that was McCain.
That was John McCain. Trying to win the votes of the thousands of Harley riders arrayed before him, McCain...
Does he think any of those people vote?
That's a good question. McCain essentially offered to toss them his wife, who was standing next to him as he said that. She had a look in her face that suggested that she wished they were in private so she could unhinge her jaw and swallow him whole. Now, the Miss Buffalo Chip pageant, for those of you unlucky enough never to have been to Sturgis during the rally, it's a notorious part of the event. It features such events as the wet t-shirt competition and the pickle-licking competition. Cindy said she was flattered at the idea of competing, but she was concerned that if she did enter the wet t-shirt competition, she might short-circuit.
What? Where the...
Was that harsh? Was that too hard?
You're only, and this is so NPR of you, you're only focusing on the female exploitation of the event.
Yes.
There is an essay portion of... of the Miss Buffalo Chip contest. It's not covered as widely as the parts that you're talking about.
All right, Mireille, here's your last quote.
I want America to know that I'm, like, totally ready to leave.
That was somebody throwing her hat into the presidential ring. All right, not her hat. Her bikini top. Her Manolo Blahnik. Her chihuahua, whatever. She threw it in. Who is this new candidate?
That would be the very hot Paris Hilton.
Very hot, yes. Or très chaud, as they say up there. First, the McCain campaign inserted Paris Hilton into the presidential race when they compared Barack Obama to her as an empty celebrity. Then, Paris Hilton responded with her own campaign ad, produced by the guys at the funnierdie.com site. And thirdly, and most amazingly, Paris Hilton seemed more at ease with the camera, her script, and with the policy issues than either of the actual candidates. The last thing that happened in this saga, and this is true, is that the McCain campaign endorsed Paris Hilton's energy plan. Quote, they said, "It sounds like Paris Hilton supports John McCain's approach to America's energy crisis," unquote. Put that on a campaign ad. Paris Hilton approves. And just for the record, by the way, here's the Obama campaign's response to the Hilton ad in its entirety. Quote, "Whatever," unquote. Corey, how did Mireille do in our quiz?
Mireille got all three right and wins Carl Castle's voice on her home answering machine.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Bien joué.
It was a real pleasure.
Thank you, Mireille. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We want to remind everybody that they can join us here just about every week at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, this week a new book came out by Ron Suskind suggesting that the White House forged a letter to back up their pre-war claims about Iraq. Well, there are other revelations in the book. It turns out President Bush, early on in his term, got very upset about the way his big cabinet-level meetings were going. Specifically, he was upset that the participants in the meeting were always doing what?
You know this.
No, I don't. I just have dozens of wonderful
telling
answers.
Telling the truth.
No.
Was it something as simple as, say, taking notes?
No.
I know he was very upset. He never wanted cell phones or calls.
No, not that. That's all true, but no. I'll give you a hint. He had to keep clearing his throat and pointing at the big seal on the back of his chair.
Not calling him Mr. President.
No. In fact, they weren't doing it to him at all. That was the problem.
They weren't talking to him.
Instead, they were talking to
Dick Cheney.
Exactly right. He was upset because everybody was addressing their remarks to Cheney instead of to him.
Ah.
Apparently, well, Cheney had them all covered.
Yeah. He was the one holding the gun. Apparently, after a few such meetings, the president told Cheney that he was upset that the participants, and these would be people like President Bush's Secretary of State and President Bush's Secretary of Energy and President, for all we know, President Bush's own mother, they were addressing Vice President Cheney instead of President Bush. Plus, Bush was annoyed that Cheney kept making him sit over in the kids' situation room. Anyway, Mr. Big Deal, Vice President, was very gracious, according to Susskind, about the whole thing. He agreed to remain silent during the meetings and just take notes, after which the president and Dick Cheney could meet in private so that Cheney could then tell the president what to do.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Corey Flintoff. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Charlie Pierce, and Paul Poundstone. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Corey. Right now it is time, of course, for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey there, Peter.
Hey, who's this?
This is Jim Stotts from Conroe, Texas.
Conroe, Texas. Where the heck is that?
That is one county north of Houston.
Can you smell Houston from there?
Unfortunately, sometimes, yeah. There's a prevailing southerly breeze here.
That's great. Well, that's nice, though. A little whiff of Houston in the morning. Well, welcome to the show, Jim. Now, you are going to play the game in which your job is to tell truth from fiction. Corey, what is Jim's topic?
If I find Andrew Weil, I'm going to rip out his beard one hair at a time.
Ow. So everybody is constantly offering us advice on how to live more healthily. Let's be honest, a lot of this stuff will not help at all. In fact, some of it is downright bad for you. Our panelists are going to tell you about three stories that clearly illustrate the unexpected dangers of healthy living. We found it in this week's news. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'll give it a try.
All right. First up, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
British celebrity chef Anthony Worrell Thompson had a fantastic recommendation. Henbane, he said in August's Healthy and Organic Living magazine, is, quote, great in salad. Really yummy. Unfortunately, henbane, an old Anglo-Saxon term meaning killer of hens, happens to be a very toxic weed that causes hallucinations, drowsiness, seizures, and possibly even death. Thompson meant, of course, to say fat hen, a safe wild herb used for tea and salads. He told the BBC the mix-up was, quote, embarrassing, but one of those genuine mistakes. No reports of any casualties yet, but the magazine has posted a warning on its website. As always, check with an expert when foraging or collecting wild plants.
A lovely organic gathered salad that could kill you. Your next story of an unintended consequence of healthy living comes from Charlie Pierce.
The Broadway Pilates studio in Delafield, Wisconsin was forced to destroy all its apparatus this week when students found themselves afflicted with a rash on the palms of their hands. Studio director Wendy Bendofsky mixed up a batch of moss-based organic cleanser from an old Native American regime, only to find that it reacted virulently with the material in the equipment causing the rash. Now all students have to wash their hands thoroughly under the supervision of the studio staff after each session, prompting Bendofsky to joke that the studio will change its name to Pontius Pilates.
Poisoned Pilates equipment in Wisconsin. Your last story of bad juju from too much tofu comes from Paula Poundstone.
Just say no to tea tree oil. Keith Richards was among the passengers on American Flight 72 from Boston Logan Airport to London Heathrow, who got an unexpected free high despite the airline's recent cutback on perks. When she woke with a bit of congestion that morning, flight attendant Andrea Brandt applied Vicks VapoRub to her chest. Once at the airport, Miss Brandt topped the VapoRub with tea tree oil, an herbal healing agent. This, investigators found, created an intoxicating aroma. Soon after takeoff, the fumes began to affect the passengers. It was a bit like heroin, really. It was slow and then bam, said Keith Richards. Pilot Jasper Byrne, secure within the cockpit, remained unaffected, but suspected something odd when strains of Beast of Burden reached him through the cockpit door. They were all singing. All I could think was, how am I going to get these buggers to put their seat backs forward, said Byrne. It was a bit like a hit of ecstasy, said Keith Richards. A jubilant group of 10 from business class donned their flotation devices and formed a conga line, chanting, cut the engines over the Atlantic. It was more sort of like a bit of Quaalude with a vodka chaser, kind of how the top of your head comes off, said Keith Richards. The flight landed safely at Heathrow. Really hard to come down, said Richards.
No, Paula, go on. All right.
Was my story a little long?
It was, but worth every second, Paula. Yeah. It was fabulous. Jim, let me review your choices for you from Roxanne Roberts, a story about how a chef in a healthy living magazine recommended that the readers poison themselves with ingredients for an organic salad. From Charlie Pierce, how a Pilates studio became a toxic waste dump through the use of an organic cleanser. Or from Paula Poundstone, the story of how a flight attendant's experiments with VapoRub and tea tree oil ended up pretty much sending the passengers on a trip they had not expected. Which of these is the real story in the news this week?
Wow, that Keith Richards is just a never-ending source of amusement.
Isn't he, though?
Yeah, but I'm going to choose answer A because the phrase that was used in that one, genuine mistake.
Genuine
mistake. British accent sounds the most genuine.
All right, so you're going to choose Roxanne's story about the poisonous herb being recommended for use in salads. Well, we spoke to an authority in this area to bring you the truth.
We would never consider using henbane on the menu at Alinea. Yeah, it's fatal. Perhaps something like eye of newt.
That was Grant Akitz, who is the chef and owner of the award-winning restaurant Alinea right here in Chicago, who is explaining why he would do a lot of things, but he wouldn't put henbane in his salads because it's bad for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Jim, you picked the right answer. Roxanne was telling the truth. You earned a point for Roxanne, which I know is your greatest pleasure in this life. And you've won our game. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
And now the game where we ask experts on a particular topic about something else entirely. Ginny Mose of CNN is known as the Queen of Quirk. Her specialty, the offbeat stories, often about animals or other odd things, that reveal how strange and ultimately trivial our world really is. We don't know whether she accepted our invitation because she likes us or because she's interested in us professionally. But either way, we're happy to have her with us. Ginny Mose, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Lately, the animals I've been covering are the political animals.
Yeah, anyway. Well, we're happy to talk to you about that because you've, of course, been covering the otter side of the political campaigns much as we have. I wanted to compare notes. But I wanted to ask you something first, which is that before you got into this business of doing the quirky stories and the odd stories and the funny stories, you were actually a hard news reporter. You covered, for example, the difficulties in China back in 1988 for CNN.
You know all my secrets.
I do. Doesn't it usually go the other way, though? Isn't the stereotype like Jane Fonda and the China Syndrome, the woman doing the light features who wants to go to hard news? You went the other way.
Yeah, no, it was exactly the opposite with me. I did hard news, and the last big stint of hard news I did was the Gulf War, the first Gulf War at the UN, and then I just wanted out of it. I wanted to let my creative juices flow.
You're like, the heck with this. I want to do talking chihuahuas.
Exactly. Wow. Or talking carrots for Obama. That was one of my favorite political ones so far.
Can you tell us about that? That was a story you did this season.
Yeah, you know, Obama's got all these kind of weird supporters, and there's actually a category of parrots for Obama where the owners have either taught the parrots to say Obama or they picked it up on their own. And there was one parrot in particular named Smokey who really was phenomenal at saying Obama, and yes, we can.
All right. We have tape of it here, so let's listen to one of these Obama maniac parrots. Here we go.
Obama. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Wow.
Gee, I mean... Is
he on the short list?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, Obama supporters mindlessly repeating slogans. That doesn't seem that unusual to me.
You know, Smokey actually learned that. His owner did not teach him. He learned that from listening to the Will I Am video. You know that song
where they sing
Yes I Am, Yes I Am?
Wow, that's crazy. Now you actually were on top of what we thought was the biggest political story of this last week, which is, of course, the Paris Hilton presidential campaign ad.
Absolutely.
Now you talk.
That story gave me a heart attack because we had a scary moment while we were doing that story. We're crashing to finish it, and about I'd say 10 seconds after it aired, we started to realize that we had included a man on the street interview, where a British guy called Paris a plonker.
A plonker.
A plonker, and he told me that meant idiot, and I put it in the piece. I had him saying plonker. Well, about 10 seconds after it finished airing, my producer Googled plonker and saw that plonker originally meant a piece of male anatomy. and we were very worried that we had just put that on the air.
Really? Adam's apple, really. That's
exactly, yeah. But it turns out that was an original meaning and not the current meaning, so I think we're okay.
Right. But here's the funny thing, is that as I think you helped discover, that this ad actually makes Paris Hilton look, for perhaps the first time, not like a plonker at all. She actually comes off rather well.
It is indeed the first time that I've had a bunch of intelligent people that I interviewed on the street were saying good things about Paris.
I know. The person, not the city, about which we often say good things. But, for example, she memorized her lines.
I was amazed by that.
I know there's a low bar here, but still.
You know, it wasn't that low. I mean, that was a lot of,
words.
You talked to camera for a while, and they said they came in offering her cue cards, and she said, I don't need them. She had memorized the script.
I do think you're setting the bar kind of low. I mean, the parrot memorized its lines. If that's now our measure of ingenuity and political wherewithal, then we're really, really in big trouble all the way around.
Parrot did not look as
good. But did you hear her energy plan? I mean, she delivered that energy plan like she believed it.
Did she?
She delivered that energy plan like ABBA singing in English.
You're saying she learned it phonetically.
She learned it phonetically.
All right. I got to ask you one last question. You work for CNN. Are they really the best political team on television, or is that just a bit of hyperbole? What do you think?
I'm going to answer that.
Oh, well.
Jeannie, I have a question. Whose job is it to poke Lou Dobbs with a stick every day and get him that angry?
I didn't poke him. He got mad at me once.
I think they hired an undocumented person to poke him with a stick.
What did you do to make Lou Dobbs mad?
A couple of things, but one of them had to do with Cher. And I'm just going to stop it right there.
You and Lou Dobbs had a dispute over a chair.
No, Cher.
Over Cher.
Wait a minute.
Why are you and Lou Dobbs fighting over Cher?
It is such a long story, but Lou and Cher know one another, so...
Oh, really?
Really? No kidding.
Not like that.
Well, wait, are you anti-Cher?
A lot of us are.
I'm not going into it.
All right. Well,
okay. On that note.
All right. But remember, anybody run into Lou Dobbs, just walk up to him and say, Cher, and see what he does. Jeannie Most, we're delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling
Congratulations. You've won the gold medal in team tug of war.
As the Olympics begin in Beijing, we thought we'd review some highlights from the history of the modern Olympic movement. And yes, at one time, tug of war was an Olympic sport. That was from a surprising timeline history of the Olympics from the New York Times Magazine. We're going to ask you three questions about past Olympic glory. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, provided you pass the urine test the IOC requires us to administer immediately afterwards. Corey, who was CNN's Jeannie Most playing for?
Marla Gutman of Chicago, Illinois.
There you go. Ready to go?
Sure.
Here we go. First question, Margaret Abbott was the first female American Olympic champion. She won the ladies' golf competition at the 1900 Paris Olympics. There was something very odd about her achievement, though. What was it? Was it A, she entered the contest and won it without realizing it was, in fact, the Olympics? B, she had just started playing golf the week before? Or C, she was the only contestant?
I'm going with C, but I don't know why.
You don't know why? You're guessing that she was the only contestant?
Yeah.
No, it was A. She had no idea she had just won the Olympics. She thought it was just a local golf tournament. She happened to be over in Paris. She entered. She won. And she got a ceramic bowl as her trophy, which she kept with her. And according to the Times, she died 55 years later without ever realizing that she was America's first woman Olympic champion. Nobody realized it. By the way, 1900, also the last year that golf was an Olympic sport.
All right, a minute too soon.
I know. You have two chances, two more chances here. Next question. Also at those 1900 games, Léon de Lunden took the gold medal in what event that has also since been dropped from the Olympic program? Was it A, live pigeon shooting, B, ox lifting, or C, fencing on horseback?
It's either A or C.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with A.
You're going with A, live pigeon shooting?
Yeah.
You're correct, live pigeon shooting. He took the gold after shooting 21 pigeons and grazing an elderly Texas lawyer who happened to pop his head up at the wrong time. This is so exciting because you've got one right with one to go. Get this, you win.
Brock, yes, you can. Brock.
Here we go.
Yes, you can.
In Helsinki, 1952 Olympics, one of the more notable events there was the 10,000-meter race walk. The race walk. What happened? A, the six competitors, tiring at the 8-kilometer mark, agreed as gentlemen to take a 5-minute break before starting again from where they had stopped. B, the two leading walkers coming down the home stretch lost control of themselves and broke into a run. Or C, not realizing it was a race, a group of officials walked out onto the track in front of the strolling competitors, disrupting it.
C.
You're going to say they didn't realize that those guys walking around the track were actually in an event, so they walked out in front of them and the whole thing got ruined. Is that what you're guessing? No, it was actually B. They broke into a run.
Oh, jeez.
They just got so caught up. Couldn't take it anymore. The IOC eventually jettisoned the 10,000-meter race walk. Corey, how did Jeannie Most do in our quiz?
Jeannie Most got only one right.
Oh. Right.
Brock, well, no, you can't. Brock.
Jeannie Most is a national news correspondent for CNN. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jeannie.
It was fun.
This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Corey Flintoff. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Corey. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Corey receives this week's shipment of limericks from our factory in Nantucket. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Charlie, in one more sign of our collapsing economy, a housing development in Oregon has gone into foreclosure. But it's not just a housing development. It's a housing development based on what theme?
A housing development based on foreclosure. As soon as you buy the house, you don't own it. Saves a lot of paperwork.
I'll give you a hint. It's hard to evict those hobbits. They just go down further.
Lord of the Rings, like,
yes,
housing
it's
development?
Based on the Shire, the home of the hobbits in the Lord of the Rings.
How cute.
It sounded like the perfect place. Ornate houses with thatched roofs, dragon-shaped beams, hobbit holes. The perfect place for dorks to raise their dorkish offspring.
Is there a golden ring hidden someplace?
No, apparently
not. Wait a minute,
not.
People are being evicted from their holes in the ground?
That's
terrible.
As Mr. Tolkien tells us, the hobbit holes were comfortable. But even Gandalf's magic is no match for a collapsing real estate market. The dream of Tolkien fan Roy Myers unraveled when the housing bubble burst, an investment partner died, and a band of orcs pillaged 8 of the homes. Now Mr. Myers and his group owe the bank $3.4 million. They're considering dropping the Shire theme and renaming the neighborhood the Grapes of Wrathaville. Paula, the New York Times reported this week on an unlikely fashion accessory that's making its way down designer runways and on the arms of celebs at Hollywood premieres. What must-have item is every fashionista clamoring to get?
Chihuahua.
No, they're over that. Those are so 1998, 99.
Something other than a chihuahua. Why a guinea pig, of course.
Working our way through the phylums.
What?
On your arm you have it?
Literally, sometimes. Ooh. Also, sometimes on your, it could be on your knee, could be in your elbow. Ooh. Those are the popular places. If you're a man and you shave, it could be in your chin.
Band-aids?
Yes, band-aids. We can just picture the Oscars red carpet next year. Well, my dress is Vera Wang and my elbow is Johnson & Johnson. The high-end Swarovski crystal-covered band-aids are appearing everywhere from the Hamptons to Hollywood. And have apparently replaced Versace's line of vaccination scars as this year's must-have bodily accessory. Quote, even if you don't have a cut, bandages are a great way to make a statement that doesn't break the bank, one designer said. And the fad has inspired...
What is the statement?
The statement is, I'm an idiot. I don't know.
But we already knew that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of redundant.
I'll spend $40 on a Band-Aid.
Wow.
The fat.
Terrible thing is there's designer knockoffs all over CVS now.
It's terrible. The fat has inspired all sorts of new trends, including people wearing smudges of Armani brand Clearasil on their face and guys walking around with bits of Prada tissue stuck to where they cut themselves shaving.
Actually, though, there is that idea, because you know how the kid ones have little dinosaurs and things? They could do, you know, some really, I suppose, if you wanted to.
Paisley.
No, you could do. You could
Argyle.
You could do designer Band-Aids.
I think he's saying that they do.
Apparently they do.
No.
Your dream,
story.
Roxanne, has become a reality.
No, but I mean literally, like, you know, like, it says Prada on it and
Why
things
not?
Like that.
Yeah.
It's the next step.
You're kind of working backwards.
Yeah, but sooner or later, we're going to get back to basic beige.
I'm stuck on you. I've got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Who's this?
Kathy Asher.
Hey, Kathy, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm very well as well. Where are you from, Kathy?
I'm from Essex Fells, New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey, my home state.
Yes. Not mine.
Not yours?
No.
Oh, you were brought there against your will, no doubt.
Exactly. Just to raise my children.
I understand. Kathy, welcome to the show. Corey Flintoff right here is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll win Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Here is your first limerick.
At the gym, people skip, jump, and hop. But that's not what I do till I drop. At 2 miles per spree, well-paid experts agree, I can also lose weight when I...
Bop.
When you bop.
No.
When you bop till you drop?
When you...
Let's hear that limerick one more time.
At the gym, people skip, jump, and hop. But that's not what I do till I drop. At 2 miles per spree, well-paid experts agree, I can also lose weight when I...
Stop.
Not stop.
No.
It's an activity. The hint is, what does one do until one
spree,
drops traditionally?
One kind of spree?
Yes. Any ideas?
No.
How about, I'll give it to you, it is shop.
Oh.
Shop till you drop. You can also lose weight when you shop. According to a new survey out of Britain, when you give your credit card a workout, you're getting one too. The average woman, it turns out, burns more than 12,000 calories a year shopping. It's not even including the extra calories you burn using your mixed martial arts skills at the Filene's basement sale. Surprisingly, men do not reap the same rewards from shopping. They only burn an average of about 9,000 calories a year doing that. The researchers say this is because men score low on stamina while shopping. They don't do it as long. But also because you don't exert a lot of energy waiting next to the dressing rooms praying for your own death. It's not an aerobic workout, Corey. All right, we have two more chances. We'll get these. Here is your next limerick.
As we beachgoers lay on our perch, God peddlers come out of their lurch. Our fun in the sun is invaded by nuns. They just got an inflatable.
Something with nuns that rhymes with lurch.
Something with nuns in it that rhymes with lurch.
Naked with rosary beads.
Church?
Church, yeah. Yes! God knows how many people have faced the stark choice between eternal salvation and a tan. So a Catholic group in the Italian Adriatic coast has reconciled the sinners with an inflatable beach church. The 98-foot-long blow-up church won't host a mass, but sunbathers can attend activities such as confession, saying the rosary, singing Marco Polo, and the ever-popular nun and priest chicken fights. Organizers are hopeful that this bouncy church will be a success. Unlike their last attempt, this is true. An inflatable church set up in the island of Sardinia blew away in the strong wind. True fact. Then there was a late lamented Cathedral of Saint-Tropez, an inflatable structure there on the beach that got hit by a stray frisbee and was last seen flying out over the Mediterranean making a rude noise.
Sea turtles often eat them.
Yes, bad, bad. Don't throw your church in the ocean. All right. It's very exciting. A little drama in the Listener Limerick Challenge this week. Get this last limerick, you will be a winner. Here it is.
In the morning, when dawn is just breaking, with mere sound I am hard to awaken. So I've got an alarm with olfactory charms. See, it fries up some slices of...
bacon.
Yes, bacon!
My kids would have been so bummed if I hadn't gotten it right.
The problem, you see, for alarm clock designers isn't waking people up. That's easy. The problem is making them want to get out of bed. So we're pleased to tell you about the new Waken Bacon Alarm Clock. You just put strips of frozen bacon in the Waken Bacon tray at night, 10 minutes before the alarm is due to go off in the morning. Two halogen lamps get busy cooking your strips of hickory smoked sin, releasing the aroma into the air. And then, of course, you'll be woken up easily and painlessly by your dogs as they climb over your face to eat your alarm clock.
If you wanted extra crispy, just hit the snooze button.
Yeah, exactly. Corey, how did Kathy do in our quiz?
Kathy Asher got 2 right and wins Carl Castle's voice.
Well done, Kathy.
Right. Good, great.
Congratulations. Well done. Congratulations.
This crowd was pulling for Kathy Asher.
They were. Kathy, congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Corey, can you give us the scores?
Yes. Charlie and Roxanne are tied with 3 apiece, and Paula has 2.
All right. Paula, you're in third place. You'll go up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank.
I'm ready, Peter.
All right, Paula, so am I. Congressional auditors announced that the government of blank could end this year with a budget surplus of $79 billion.
Iraq!
Right. FBI officials announced that government scientist Bruce Ivins was the sole culprit in the blank attacks in 2001 and have declared the case closed.
Anthrax.
Right. A judge ordered Kwame Kilpatrick, mayor of blank, sent to jail this week.
Detroit.
Detroit. Although he's declared himself long retired from the mob, the son of infamous mobster blank was arrested on federal charges this week.
Got him.
Right. To ensure the safety of motorcyclists, the Florida Highway Patrol launched a campaign encouraging the bikers to blank.
Coast.
No, wear neon green leather chaps.
Oh, yeah.
They will like that. 4 days after he was injured in a car accident in Mississippi, it was announced that actor blank and his wife are divorcing.
Oh, I can never remember this guy's name. Clark Gable.
Excellent try.
Morgan Freeman was
sure,
his name.
Sure, Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
He did the penguin narration. I know Morgan Freeman.
Police in Florida arrested a man after he called 911 3 times from inside a Subway restaurant simply because a Subway employee blanked.
Didn't put his sauce on his sandwich.
Exactly right. He was provoked, Reginald Peterson was, because workers not only left the mustard off his 2-foot-long Italians, they left off the mayonnaise as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The mayonnaise, too.
Yeah, they had a comment.
He called 911 first to complain, and then he called back twice more to ask why the police weren't there yet. They showed up and arrested him.
Don't you hate that?
Corey, how did Paula do on our quiz?
Paula got 5 right for 10 more points. She now has 12 points and the lead.
Well done.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. We flipped a coin. Roxanne has elected to go last. Charlie, you're up next. Safety concerns for Olympic athletes grew after terrorists attacked a police compound in Northwest Blank.
China.
Right. On Thursday, Condoleezza Rice threatened sanctions against Blank over its nuclear program.
Iran.
Right. A powerful storm in downtown Blank led to tornado warnings and the evacuation of fans from the stands of Wrigley Field.
Chicago.
It was so cool. Yes, on Thursday, the Green Bay Packers announced that they were trading Blank to the New York Jets.
Brett Favre.
Right. After hearing a woman's screams, German police went on a manhunt, equipped with a night vision equipment and a helicopter, but all they found was blank.
A badger.
A Randy Badger, yes. NASA's Phoenix lander has discovered a toxin in the soil that makes it less likely that blank could support life.
Mars.
Right. Delta Airlines announced this week that it will introduce blank access on certain airplanes this fall.
Wireless internet access.
Right. Verizon refused to allow a doctor in Delaware to use his name as his email address because his last name is blank.
AT&T.
No, his last name is Lipschitz. Verizon.
Only one?
Verizon employees were shocked that Dr. Herman I. Lipschitz wanted to use his last name as an email address because it has a naughty word in it, they felt.
Lip.
Yes. Mr. Lipschitz, or Dr. Lipschitz, was outraged. He immediately contacted his lawyer, Mr. Hugh Jorgen Esquire. Corey, how did Charlie do on our quiz?
Charlie got 7 right for 14 more points. He now has 17 points and has taken the lead.
Well done.
Thank you, thank you. It's all in the badger, my boy. It's all in the badger.
You got the badger. That was impressive. All right then, Corey. How many does Roxanne need to win?
Roxanne now needs 7 to tie, 8 to win.
Oh, my goodness, Roxanne. Can you do it?
Well.
Let's see. Here we go. This is for the game, Roxanne. Fill in the blank. In the first war crimes trial at Guantanamo Bay, the driver for blank was convicted of aiding Al-Qaeda.
Osama bin Laden. Right.
11 people were arrested in what FBI officials are calling the largest case of blank theft ever.
Credit card.
Right, or identity theft. Republican officials announced that blank may not attend the GOP convention in Minneapolis next month.
The vice president.
Right. Dick Cheney, Russian Nobel Prize winning novelist blank, died at age 89.
Solzhenitsyn.
Right. A man in Bavaria caused approximately $1,500 in damage to a public toilet when he decided to blank.
Um, He decided to flush a badger.
No, he decided...
Ow.
A randy badger. No, he decided to bring his horse in with him.
And the horse he rode in on?
Exactly. Federal prosecutors in New York have dropped an inquiry into the prescription drug overdose of actor blank.
Heath Ledger.
Right. Conservationists were thrilled at the discovery of a population of 125,000 blanks in the Republic of Congo.
Wild gorillas.
Right. New Zealand is celebrating the news that blank will become a father for the first time.
The 111-year-old reptile named Tartunga or something like that.
No, I'm afraid it's a Tuatara. I think we can give it to her. You're right. Henry, the 111-year-old Tuatara lizard. We've mentioned Henry in the show before when at the ripe old age of 111, he finally got frisky for the first time ever with a younger woman, a 70-year-old lizard named Mildred. Now Mildred has a little baby Tuatara in the oven. Henry's passing out cigars, the reptile equivalent. And even better, according to zookeepers, he's considering getting amorous again in 2047. No. Next March. Next March would be his time to do that. So, Corey, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne needed 8 correct answers. She got 7. So with 17 points, Roxanne and Charlie are this week's co-champions.
Well done.
Thank you.
Roxanne, if only you had known about the horse in the toilet.
and the horse you rode in at. Yes. No, I missed that one.
Now, panel, what will be the big story out of the first week of the Beijing Olympics? Paula Poundstone.
China is one big happy country.
Roxanne Roberts.
Paris Hilton flies to Beijing, seduces the entire Chinese track team, thus causing China to accuse the U.S. of human rights violations.
And Charlie Pierce.
There was a brief kerfuffle at the gymnastics venue when President Bush showed up and asked someone to saddle the pommel horse.
And if any of those things happen at the Beijing Olympics, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Corey Flintoff, for your able job filling in for Carl. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Charlie Pierce. Thanks to all of you for listening. You are fabulous. This is NPR, National Public Radio.